Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of React Roundup. My name is TJ Van Tol, and I will be your host today. And with me on the panel, I have Paige Niedringhaus.
Hey, everyone.
And our special guest today is Christian Boat. Christian, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Hey folks, this is Charles Max Wood from Top End Devs, and lately I've been working on actually building out Top End Devs. If you're interested, you can go to topenddevs.com/podcast, and you can actually hear a little bit more about my story, about why I'm doing what I'm doing with Top End Devs, why I changed it from devchat.tv to Top End Devs. But what I really want to get into is that I have decided that I'm going to build the platform that I always wished I had with devchat.tv. And I renamed it to Top End Devs because I want to give you the resources that are going to help you to build the career that you want, right? So whether you want to be an influencer in tech, whether you want to go and just max out your salary and then go live a lifestyle with your family, your friends, or just traveling the world or whatever, I want to give you the resources that are going to help you do that. We're going to have career and leadership resources in there, and we're going to be giving you content on a regular basis to help you level up and max out your career. So go check it out at topenddevs.com. If you sign up before my birthday, that's December 14th. If you sign up before my birthday, you can get 50% off the lifetime of your subscription. Once again, that's topenddevs.com.
So why don't you start by telling people who you are, what you do, why you're famous, all those good sorts of things.
Yeah, I wouldn't say famous, but we'll get there in time. Yeah, so I'm from Romania, from Transylvania, more specifically from the Cluj city. I started working with Flash. Flash was my introduction to programming. I think I was amazed that you can actually draw, and then with code, you can just be lazy about it and duplicate your work and then connect them. And I tried to build a game. I think that was my first programming memory, because I didn't have any games. And I was like, well, Flash, that's the way to build games, which is kind of interesting because it led me to a path to become a Flash game developer. Worked on a couple of games there. But then in 2010, I had to pivot towards JavaScript because, Flash kind of died at that point. And since then, I've been working on all sorts of projects, from custom devices that were hooked on e-bikes. They were running JavaScript. That was a scary project. And then, enterprise level stacks with, serverless, all the hypes, microservices, everything. And then more recently, I got more into consulting and contracting and also open source. So for the last 4 or 5 years or so, I focused more on open source, which I started contributing to Preact initially. And I'm also part of the core team at Preact. And then I created Goober.
Man, there's a lot we can get into. I know we want to talk a lot about your open source work, but first I think I need the story about how you have JavaScript running on an e-bike. Can you give like a little more detail on that? Because I feel like I can't leave that hanging. More detail.
it was such an awesome experience. And throughout the years, whenever I reflected on projects that I worked, that was like my highlight up until, I know, a few years ago. Because it was so awesome. Like you could, I was working on a chart, for example, drawing a chart on a canvas with data from the driver, from the engine. I would just build an image on an SD card, plug in the device, hook the device to the bike, and just took it for a ride and see it working or not. Mostly
really
not.
Cool.
Yeah.
It must have been a fun one to test too, because I don't know how you kind of had to like take it out to use it.
Yeah. Initially, we didn't have any like controllers, like knobs or whatever on like physical knobs to make sure that to simulate some environment. So we actually had to build it and take it for a spin to see if it works or not. And then look at the logs and stuff like that. I think the project is still up and running, but I think they switched from JavaScript to Qt, which uses QML, if I remember correctly, which is kind of JavaScript, but not really. I mean, I think they still can run JavaScript, but it's described in a different way. Yeah.
Yeah. I think cool. I understand a little bit about it. Sounds kind of like MQTT, which I think is an IoT programming. I don't even know if it's a language, but it's more like a way to transmit events or data from one, I guess, producer to the subscribers. So yeah, if it's constantly spitting out data, that's probably a pretty good way to do it.
I think it was even more kind of low level than that. I think we had some custom JavaScript, custom web view embedded in Qt. And then we would just assume that an API is available globally, like, engine or whatever. And we would just, got called when new data, and then we would display it, with our own in-house framework in JavaScript.
Yeah. Qt is a very old school, like, cross-platform UI toolkit.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Cool. One of the nicer ones.
So there's a lot of open source stuff that we want to get into today, but maybe we can start with Goober, which is, first of all, just a really fun name. Maybe you could start by just explaining what that project is, like what problem it solves, where it came from, stuff like that, and then we could go from there.
Yeah. So before Goober, I was working on Preact, and the ideology in Preact is to keep it small under a certain constraint. And by learning that and doing that, that mentality kind of like settled in my mind, and it spoiled me in the sense that whenever I was working on something, it got to be small. So I was working on a website, and I wanted to use style components. The API is great; you can use it straightforward. But the size was just like the library size was greater than the whole website. And at that point, I mean, the library is not large, it's just 12. My website was kind of small in content. So the JavaScript, that's why. But that kind of like sidetracked towards me creating actually a library that kind of replaced style components in that sense. And, I was using it heavily from then. But at some point, I wanted to open source to see, what others are thinking and if it's useful or it's just a small project for me. And when I thought about the name, I was trying to come up with this, like, small but memorable, describing in a sense. And at some point, I was just playing with the idea of, CSS in JS, but at the cost of peanuts. And then I quickly went to see what the thesaurus has in store for peanuts. And I found the term Goober, and it was free on NPM. So,
I like it.
Yeah. So it was just fitting. Yeah, it was like everything just fit into place, and it was meant to be, I guess.
And you got a challenge. You got a dollar to shave a bite off of Goober?
Yeah. That's
really cool. Make some money.
Yeah.
Has anybody gotten a dollar?
Yeah. I'm more than
really.
$1. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Up until now, so I call it the Great Shave Off Challenge, and it's still up and running. I'm working on the Great Shave Off Challenge Season 2, where, it's going to be more in store.
Does the number go up? Is it now?
Yeah.
Did you be like $2?
No.
$2 a bite.
So there were more than 12 participants, I think, that shaved around 60 bytes of Goober.
Nice.
Yeah. Which, it's small.
It's small. A kilobyte. That's something.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, and for the season two, I think I'm going to have to 10x the sum or some point or something like that. Because at this point, it's so small that it's really difficult to find something that would really shave, I know, substantial amount. Substantial, I mean, yeah, like more than 5 bytes. Yeah. So I'm really curious for
anybody who's worked with typical styled components, is Goober, is the syntax very similar, or how did you make such a compact version, I guess, of CSS and JS?
Yeah, that's a good segue to the trade-offs part of stuff. So, you know, we have the established libraries like Style Components, Emotion, and most of them offer the styled API, which has all the elements name, right? Style dot something, which is the tag name of an element. That basically adds size. So to me, that looked like a convenient developer utility, as in, you know, it's just there and you have an autocomplete that can tell you the tag name. But in the same way, you could just type the tag that you want. And also, styled API supports passing it not just the tag name, but also a reference to another component. So, you know, to me, it was like, well, let's just keep it simple and always specify what kind of components you want. If it's a string, as in a name, that means you want a native HTML element. If not, it's, you know, it's just, you're basically extending a previously defined component. So I think a large chunk of the size of the libraries are coming from that list of elements. So just by trimming that down, I think, just don't quote me on this, but kind of like maybe 4 or 5 kilobytes of JavaScript just from the list of elements. But that was like the first step. And then I went more and abstracted away, which meant getting into the regex world and trying to find a way to parse the SAS like syntax that Style Components and Emotion and everyone else is supporting via Stylist, because Style Component and Emotion, I think most of them, they don't have their own parser for CSS. They use another library called Stylist, which is I think around 2 or 3K at this point, which is super small in, you know, for parsing the styles. So that was me attempting to use regex, and yeah, pretty much I was able to do it with the regex rule. Actually, two, because one is for cleaning up the the new lines, spaces, comments, or whatever, and only the other one is for actually parsing the content into, I don't know, some sort. I call it AST, like an abstract syntax tree, but it's not. It's just an object with key and values, so it does have any metadata or stuff like that.
So one question I have: you have the challenge to make the project smaller. Are there certain, like, do you pursue small size like almost at all costs? Because lots of times you can make code changes that will make a project smaller, but will also make it harder to understand or harder to read or maybe less performant. So I'm wondering how you like see those trade-offs, given that size is very important to you. But I'm assuming there's some line that you wouldn't cross in terms of like you have to keep this thing somewhat maintainable, right?
Yeah. That's a good question. And there were lots of requests of adding, I don't know, all sorts of APIs or changes to Goober. And I was open to those changes, but they were adding size. So I have this sandbox locally, which is not good, but whatever, where each change, I have to see if the tree shake version of the output is under 1K. So each time someone, I don't know, comes up with something that wants to introduce, I take it locally, build my own stuff, then, you know, look at the output. And if that passes the 1K limit, then I'm going to have to say, no, sorry, this is just too large for Goober. And there were occasions where I was like, oh, I wish I could have this in Goober. So it's, I don't know, at this point, I think it's just me being a bit silly about the size. Pun intended.
I get it, though, because that's sort of your unique way of standing out, right? Because you're not trying to be feature complete or anything, because if you wanted something more that had more features or offered more stuff, there are libraries for that. So I think it kind of makes sense, because it's sort of preserving the reason for this library to exist and that people would want to use it. So
yeah, this kind of also opened up a new set of users for Goober, which I don't think usually you see it. So if you want to build a website with style components, you choose just style components, emotion, or whatever, or Goober, right? you build your website. But at the same time, there are library authors that, you know, they want to have some sort of a style component like library inside their own library, or just using it to be able to, you know, describe the components or style their, I don't know, third party components or the user defined components. And it's kind of weird to add a 12 kilobytes third party or dependency to your own library. So I've seen folks using Goober just for that. For example, I'm gonna call out React Halt Hot Toast. So I'm using it whatever. Just because they use Goober. No, it's actually cool. It's a cool project. But that's a way to keep your project small, right? To use something that's small by definition, and then you can build on top of it. So yeah.
So if I'm using Emotion, can I also use Goober? How's that work?
Yeah, yeah. So they don't actually, you know, step on each other's turf, so to speak, because we use our own style tag or element. And we use different types of injecting the styling in the browser. Emotion, they worked tremendously at the whole internal way of injecting styles. And they have this out of the box. I'm not sure if they still have it, but you know, it was there previously, where each style component would also have a style tag render near it. So that means on the server side, if you render it via, I don't know, render to string or render to node stream, you would have the styling there without the need to have server-side render preparedness, I guess, you know, to have a way to collect the styles on the backend and attach them.
Right, like make a CSS file and extract CSS.
Exactly, yeah.
And yours does the extract CSS route?
Yes, yes. Same way with style components. So on the backend, if you want to use Goober, it's fine. You can use it. But you gotta roll up your sleeves a bit and just call an extract CSS function. You'll get your CSS and then you can place it wherever you want.
Nice. So forgive me, this is probably a dumb question, but if you were using React, I'm sure that Goober would work with that because that's typically where we think about styled components. But would it work in something like a Vue project, Angular, or just a plain JavaScript project as well?
Yes. So Goober, by definition, is agnostic, doesn't really care which kind of library you use. There is, the ceremony, I would say, to initialize Goober is to, if you use kind of like a JSX syntax or a pragma method to create your components, you're going to have to tell Goober's setup function that, you know, this is my pragma. This kind of like open up the possibilities, as in, you know, you can use Vue X, right, with their JSX syntax. You can use React, Preact as well. And also Solid. Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
So I think they still have it. I haven't checked in a while, but they have Goober as part of their style components package. I think they have another one there. But they also have the Goober one. So that was really cool to see. Yeah. But one other usage of Goober, it was in web components. So that was really surprising when when someone from the community reached out and was like, well, I'm using Goober on web components and this is how I do it. And I tried as hard as possible just to capture that usage in an integration test just so we don't lose it. So even to today, it's really cool to have something that's really not tied to a library. Because initially I was thinking of, okay, let's just do separate entry points without a setup function. Because that wouldn't add necessarily size to the package, because they would be like kind of add-ons. So if you use it, you're going to have it in your bundle. If not, you're not.
Sure.
Yeah. But I've just kept it agnostic and turned out fine.
Oh, one other that I thought of is Svelte. That one seems to be an up and coming framework.
Yeah. And I think I've seen Svelte using Goober as well. Someone from the Svelte community. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, there's not much to what's going on inside Goober, right? It's just at the call side, we're just collecting the CSS in either on the server, we're collecting in an object, but in the browser, we're collecting in the exact style element that's in the page. So whenever you render something, the style is going to be appended. If it's defined already, it's not. it skipped, right? So you got the performance boost from there. Yeah.
I think it's interesting because, yeah, Svelte has its own way of doing CSS and as has Vue.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I'll have to look into it, but there's all sorts of usages.
Yeah, very cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is funny, like, put something out there and just see the random ways that it gets used. The library use case, like other libraries using Goober, is especially interesting to me because I can totally see it, because most of the time for average websites, like when people ask about size, normally it's like a kilobyte here, a kilobyte there. It's not going to matter too much for your application. But for like a distributable library, those are the people that create those are very cognizant on size. Like you said, like you don't want to take on a 12K dependency, but for like a UI component, you might want some CSS and JS because it would help improve the logic of what you're doing. So I'm just sort of talking through it in my head because I think it's kind of fascinating and the library fits that niche so well. It's really interesting.
Yeah. And one other usage that it just popped into my head right now. So with the whole Tailwind hype, right, and popularity, there's this project called twin.macro, and it's basically at compile time, right? You're using, this was before, I think, Tailwind in JS. I think they have their own just-in-time compiler. So this was before. So the author created a way that you can use style components, emotion, and Goober as well. So, but all the component, all the styling definitions, even though you're using the styled API, are going to be ending up in Tailwind like class names. So it's kind of cool to see that as well.
Very interesting. Yep. Cool. So you've worked on quite a variety of open source stuff as well, and you mentioned that you've done a lot of Preact stuff. You're on the Preact team, and I think that's a library that hasn't come up super recently on this podcast. So I'd love to, maybe you could start by just people that haven't heard of the library before. Could you just describe like what Preact is, what it does, why you might want to consider using it?
Yeah. So you might already kind of have an idea what Preact is aimed at doing or wants to be. So the whole idea of Preact is to offer kind of the same React or an alternative to React, but in a smaller size, right? So I think at this point, React with React and React DOM, you're going to go past the 40 kilobytes in size. So Preact is going to stay under 4. Initially, it was 3, but you know, with all the addition recently and keeping up with the APIs, that grew a bit. But yeah, I'm biased, obviously. So don't take my word. Just check out the Preact project before you use it. So do your own due diligence. But, you know, I mean, I've been so successful at using it. And, you know, I've enjoyed it so far. And that's why I got into it, right? So, yeah.
So can I use all the same component libraries that I do with React? Can I use them with Preact?
Yeah. So Preact.
Really?
Yeah. So Preact has this compat entry point, which kind of adds the necessary APIs for a third-party library to think that it's using React, but actually it's using Preact. Obviously, you kind of need some kind of build step or aliasing going on, right? From React to Preact compat, and then from React DOM to Preact compat. It's the same package, so you don't need a DOM package and a core package with Preact. So that's also a nice alternative, because you don't need like two separate dependencies to build something on the DOM. Yeah. So, but you can use them as long as you alias them correctly, which is not so difficult in today's time. But yeah, you should be fine using it.
So I can ask the same question we asked of Goober. Presumably there's some reason why Preact is like 10 times smaller than React. Like, I'm assuming there's some trade-offs you're making with Preact as well, right? Are there like features that don't work, or I assuming there's something.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure if anyone looked at React's code base. You know, it's pretty explicit, as in, you know, it goes on, and you know, it's that for a reason, right? Because there are a lot of contribution there, and it's a popular package, and it needs to be to have this kind of architecture. Now with Preact, things are more, not that obfuscated, but they're more, you know, they're little gotchas, right? So the type checking, for example, I don't know, the diff engine also. So from your first pass over the code, you might not get it. So you're going to have to, you know, just go through it and learn it, and maybe clone it locally, play around with it, and so on. Because that's what I did. That's how I got into it. we had a bug. I was hitting a bug and I wanted to fix it. And, you know, looking at the code source, initially it was like, not that straightforward, but it was a learning experience. And I think if you, if you like that kind of stuff, you get hooked. Yeah. But I wanted to mention something else. Yeah. That Preact, for example, doesn't have the synthetic event system that React has. That also a good, but in some cases, folks are kind of confused because the synthetic event system in React, it's kind of abstracting away or, you know, just kind of stays between the user and their events, the UI events. So when someone coming from vanilla.js or just web expects an event to be just an event, in Preact, you get the raw event, but in React, you get the synthetic event system. But with Preact, we don't have that because we didn't have to abstract it away.
So does Preact offer server-side rendering similar to how the Next.js framework would, for instance?
Yes. Yep. So we're working on version 11. Right now, Preact has version 10. By we, I mean the team. I'm not that involved anymore. I wish I can, but just the time constraint is difficult at this point. So version 11 would have the server entry point in the same package, because today the server package that renders your Preact components to a string or a node lives in another package, which is still part of the Preact ecosystem, let's call it. But now we're going to move that to the main core package, just so, because, you know, it's useful to have everything in one place. So yeah, you can do server side rendering, you know, streaming, whatever you need. The only thing I think that is not going to be out of the box in Preact is the server components, which there is ways to implement it. And the team has experience with a few different ways to integrate it. Mm-hmm. But at this point, I think Preact will not have the server components paradigm baked into it.
I mean, yeah. Server components is a pretty dramatic shift from how we've all been building React applications up until now. But I always love the people who ask the library maintainers, like the day after the React core team comes out with something, you know, have you updated your docs yet? Does it work? Can we do suspense and server components? And it's like, no, they just told everybody that this is even a thing. There's way we're ready for it.
Is it out? It's always kind of in perpetual beta. The server component stuff.
I thought it was still in beta, but it's you know, like experimental. If you put up a feature flag, you can try it out, kind of thing. But,
I think it's in Next. I think you can get it in Next now too.
Very
it's experimental in Next as well. So you can use it, but there's flags everywhere to tell you don't do anything serious with it.
Don't
yet.
Put it in production.
Don't use it if you carry your sites up.
Right. Yeah.
Hey folks, I'm here with JD from Raygun. JD, I mean, it seems like a lot of things these days are kind of pushing us more toward productivity, right? We install VS Code extensions, we do CI/CD, we kind of get this stuff off our plate, automate as much as we can, and move quickly. And one of the tools that I tell people to get is something like Raygun. Do you want to just explain real quick how Raygun can help with the productivity?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's several fold. I like to think of Raygun as almost being like a full-time engineer on your team that's keeping an eye on things and is able to report the important faults or performance bottlenecks so that you aren't guessing. And so that's one element. But then to that point where we store is all of the data we possibly can on the context of the error or performance issue, so that, you know, we integrate with source control systems. You can jump into our APM and get method level timing details with the source code right beside it. So if you're looking at it going, why is this page so slow? You know, you can usually just eyeball the code right there and then. So speeding everything up, which I think is really important with, you know, our industry is under so much pressure right now.
Yeah.
You know, we've got to try and get people being more efficient because we're not going to have a whole lot more people suddenly.
Right. Absolutely. And I love that idea. I've done plenty of optimizations myself, right? And having an APM tool that will actually say, this is the slow code, right? So instead of me trying to guess or look at it and go, oh, do I have an N+1 query here? Yeah. It just tells me where the problem is. And that's really powerful in something like Raygun or...
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a huge fan of Iron Man. And, you know, the idea is that I would love a virtual Jarvis that's just going, hey, there's this thing. Do you want me to go fix this? Do you want me to solve
yeah.
that? It's like, that's what we need to get to.
Yep, absolutely. Well, if you want the next best thing, go to raygun.com. It's not Jarvis, but it will tell you where the problem is so you can go fix it. You can get a free trial right now if you want. It's raygun.com.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yeah. So Christian, one thing I'm always curious about with open source projects like this, like who is Preact? Like I really know nothing about the project. Like who maintains it? I'm curious like how you got involved with it. Like, is there any relationship with the actual, like the core React team? Like I'm very curious about just the logistics of how the project runs itself.
Yeah, thank you for the question. Maybe I didn't do enough description of the project. So Preact was started by Jason Miller. Jason is a developer advocate at Google. So I think he just, when React came out, he was just trying out to learn React, and he ended up building his own library basically to write the same thing, but smaller in size. So basically that's how he started. Now, the team, we don't really have a direct connection with the main React team at Meta, but we do have through network and connections. We do talk to each other from time to time, and we kind of like, I know, ask for, you know, implementations, weirdness that we're, you know, either encountering or they are, I don't know, maybe they're not doing it in a way that we were thinking about doing it. For example, the hooks package. React is doing it in a way, we're doing it another way, obviously more smaller, but, you know, in a different implementation detail, basically. So yeah, there's no direct connection, but, you know, we do from time to time, you know, get the conversation going.
Is it keeping up with the stuff like concurrent mode? Is that in there?
No. So concurrent mode, that's something that I think, let me remember, but I think we didn't include it because it didn't make sense. Because
yeah, sort of an architectural enhancement to React.
Concurrent mode was really useful when you had like a syntactic event system and you have to queue them and then you have to like, you know, dispatch them and things like that, and you have to do it in a frame. With Preact, you know, it's more low level, closer to the metal, I would say. I think for a long time we had that motto, closer to the metal. Yeah, so yeah, concurrent mode was not is not part of Preact, because even the end user or the authors who are writing in React, they usually are not aware of concurrent mode. You know, they're just, you know, it might be there or might not be there. So their direct connection with concurrent mode, it's not that obvious that we have to do it. And also we want to follow React's API surface as close as we can. But if something doesn't make sense for Preact or for the web in its entirety, then we should just take a pause and look deeper into it.
Yeah.
For example, suspense is in Preact because, you know, it's useful.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense. Yeah.
So let me back up a little bit. I think that you mentioned that you actually got into being part of the Preact core team by fixing a bug in their code. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so how did it kind of go from you noticed one thing and fixed it to you're now a core team member? Did you just keep digging into stuff like that as you were using Preact?
Yeah, pretty much. So let me take back. I think we were having issues with the server-side rendering injection of HTML. And we discovered the bug. And, you know, I just wanted to get it fixed in version 8. And then I opened up the pull request to open in version 8. And then Jason reached out and he was like, wait, we're actually working on a new version. So do you mind fixing it there as well? So then I had to be included in all the conversations going about the new version. And then I started contributing to it more and more. And at the end of the day, it happened. And, you know, I was included in the core team. Yeah.
That's a fantastic perfect way experience. To get into open source. Yeah.
Yeah. It was quite cool. I mean, and also, we're using Slack for our main ways of, I know, talking with the community, but there's so many useful conversations going in the Slack channel as well, because folks are not just encountering Preact or React issues, right? They have all sorts of questions like, you know, how do I properly alias React to Preact? Or does this make sense to be in Preact, or, you know, stuff like that. And you're always like learning about how folks are using your library by just listening to the community. And Preact is really welcoming in that regard. I mean, the kindness and empathy that, you know, you see there from the team members is, yeah, I never seen it before. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's tough too. And that's always the thankless part of open source too, because those are the parts that, man, like it, you can spend endless time answering people. So, and you get, for all the nice people that come in, you have to deal with some of the crazies and the people that are very demanding. So it requires, it requires quite specific. A bit of patience. Yeah.
Specific issues.
Yeah.
Indeed. Yeah. You wish they would read the fine manual first. So speaking of which though, let's say Goober is an example. If I'm thinking about making my own open source library, what kind of time commitment do you have on just kind of the daily maintenance of Goober? Like how much of it is an hour a day, hour a week, now that it's going, like for fielding questions and bug reports and PRs and all that?
Yeah, I'm usually a notification freak. So if I got a notification from somewhere, I got to check it out. So if it's something that I can answer on the spot, I'll do it on the spot. If not, I'll have to mark it as unread and come to it later. You know what? I don't think I ever like tracked the time that I worked on Goober. It was just if it happens and I'm at the computer, I'll check it out and I'll do it. So that's a good exercise that I should do that. just to see if at the end of the month, does it make sense or not? I mean, obviously, financially, it does not, but yeah.
It could pay off. You never know. But I guess the question might also be, how long did it take you to start building Goober before you had something that you felt like this is a pretty good product that other people might want to use in their own applications? Do you remember?
I think it was beginning of 2019 when I did Goober or released Goober in February or something like that. And I was working on this website and then I worked on another website and I remember that I had that snippet because it was just a GitHub gist in the beginning. And at that point, I realized, okay, I should make a library out of this because for me, I'll have to reuse it over and over again. It just makes sense. And I think when I was trying to publish it on NPM, I realized that, you know, if finding a name was so, it was so fitting and everything, you know, it was there. I don't know. It was a light bulb moment, I guess.
Okay. And so this Goober was kind of more of an existing thing that you had already built and were using and just decided this is useful for me. Other people might also want to.
Yeah. But it happened really fast. I think January 2018 and then by the middle of February, I already have it published. So, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. But I think the initial version was under 800 bytes. So I think that was like the tweet or the catchphrase. Yeah.
Yes, but now it's gotten so big.
Yeah, exactly.
So actually, on that note, I'm curious, since like building small libraries is kind of, it seems to be your thing, building or working on them. Do you have any tips along those lines? Like, are there any tricks that you find you consistently apply, or like that this is like a quick win to reduce file size? Because you know, we have, this might not be applicable for your average developer building your average app, but if you're, I mean, for library developers, this is very important because you commonly want your things to be as small as possible. So for other like library developers out there that might be listening, like what are some things that you, you know, some techniques you apply or tricks you might have to get the sizes down?
That's a good question. And yeah, I think you're right. We should differentiate between library authors and then authors of websites, because the shaving the size of a website, you know, is something that is different, you know, in terms of like choosing your libraries, offloading the JavaScript as much as possible from your initial load and stuff like that. Now, for library authors, it's just more about coding style, right? How you write your code and so on. Now, for me, what worked for Goober, I'm not sure if if this is true for other libraries, is trying to ignore as much as possible ESLint from you know, underlying the weirdness, like, you know, using just double equal in place of triple equal and stuff like that, and then just using null as a way of checking for falsy values and passing that along. Also, instead of having a string constant, you know, you might use a number or a hex value, you know, for that matter. And it's also useful. So I have this, I'll get the link later. So it's kind of like a gzip thermal viewer. So basically you have your document or your, I don't know, your value, which is a string, and the gzip thermal value, thermal viewer is showing you which character is used more. Cause I think with gzip, if you use it 3 times or more, it gets compressed better. Right. Yeah. So I think that was like my main debugger for size difference is like the flags name, the properties, then, you know, all this minification stuff that was happening. I was looking at the output and then putting in there and then figure out, okay, I need a new flag. Which name should I, or which character should I pick out of this like red and bluish grid?
Oh man, that's fascinating. Back when I kind of worked on jQuery, the jQuery project would do this to a certain extent as well. Like, but I didn't know there were tools for helping do this, but they would compare the gzip output, and there were people on the team that knew the gzip algorithm quite well, because it, like you said, it essentially takes like common strings and like replaces them with a symbol more or less. So if you can reuse like chunks of strings, it can actually help you significantly. But to have like a thing that's like giving you almost like a live view into helping optimize that is kind of crazy to me. That's really awesome.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It was a great find. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I got to geek out on this. So, do you actually use the minifier as is, or do you actually minify basically the variable names yourself, and you're just like, heck with it, I can do a better job?
No. I'm using the minifier. Okay. I used to have some kind of control in place to just minify my own variables, but it was getting out of hand, and it wasn't. I couldn't keep track. Like,
I cannot possibly read this code.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Wow. Okay.
But when I say like picking up the property names, you know, it's like when you pass some arguments in form of an object, and those arguments, you know, the object, the properties inside the object are named.
Right. That's not going to get minified.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So you gotta be clever about it and just figure out which character I should use here. So it'll just compress better. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I'm guessing, are you anti TypeScript for your libraries? Because I'm wondering, I have to imagine the TypeScript compiler is going to introduce some bloat into the output, I would think at least.
So I think that used to be the case for the TypeScript compiler to inject some things in there that you might not want to have in there. But I think we're not there anymore. I think the TypeScript compiler is just like, you know, outputting as close to the mantle as possible. But for that case, when it was the case, when, you know, you got the bloat inside your bundles from the TypeScript, I was kind of against it. But I turned, no, I pivoted towards TypeScript, and I'm using it daily, and it's useful. But at the same time, I'm not sure if I'm there yet, as in to rewrite Goober with TypeScript. So I think that would be like the the point where I'm completely in the TypeScript world. But yeah, I don't know. Well, maybe we'll get there, but I don't have any guarantees.
Yeah, because I feel like the things you're talking about like shortcuts in terms of like the things ESLint complains about, like TypeScript would also probably not be your friend there.
Or maybe it would be. You know, if you got weird variable names, you know, at least you can get the type hinting on your like A, you know, the AAA one. Oh, wait, that's a number. AAA two, that's the string, you know. But wait, okay. Well, let me just dispel the whole like TypeScript bloat thing. It depends on what your target is.
Yeah.
If your target is like ES Next, it's not going to add anything. If your target's like ES Five, of course it's going to add stuff. Everything's an add, like, there was no for each. I mean, there was, you know, there's like, there was nothing. Right. So there's no four of it has to go and shim all that stuff. So
yeah.
And it's a good target.
Yeah, exactly. And this applies to every bundler, right? Who compiles your JavaScript code. So it's just
And we're talking about a pretty niche situation here, like building a library that's whole goal is to say small is like not your average thing that you're developing to. It's pretty specialized use case.
Yeah, it can't be to everyone.
It would be interesting to see if we could take some of those things that you've learned building out really small. Yeah, you know, because I mean, at the end of the day, like I've been seeing people like rolling around like, oh, 10 megabytes of JS up to the client. You know, it's hokey, but not terrible. It's 10 megabytes. Are you kidding me? Like, that's insane. You know, and people, they just like it, just they don't even think about it. Right. Yeah. And so maybe there's some things like, you know, you could still do this. You could, you know, there's some things that you could do.
Yeah.
Not to be crazy.
Yeah, but at the same time, I can understand them why they are shipping 10 megabytes. Because they want to be productive. You know, they want to build stuff and they want to ship it. And honestly, maybe it's better to ship something that's maybe bloated and then take a step back, breathe a little, and then go in and make sure that you're not shipping 10 megabytes anymore. But then you have that problem. And maybe you don't know about the problem until you're shipping your product or your website. So, yeah, I think there's like silver lining there. But yeah.
If you're doing a proof of concept, then 10 megabytes is fine. 100 megabytes is fine.
Wait, isn't every product a proof of concept?
Seems like it.
Well, Christian, this has been an awesome chat. Is there anything else that we've missed that you want to mention before we get into our picks? Anything with your open source work or anything else you want to highlight that we haven't gotten to?
No, I think that's about it. Just use Goober as much as you can and take a look at PreactJS whenever you can.
Cool. And we'll make sure to get those linked up in the show notes as well.
Hi, this is Charles Max Wood from Top End Devs, and lately I've been coaching some people on starting some podcasts and in some cases just taking their career to the next level. You know, whether you're beginner going to intermediate, intermediate going to advanced, whether you're trying to get noticed in the community or go freelance, I've been helping these folks figure out how to get in front of people, how to build relationships, and how to build their careers and max out and just go to the next level. So if you're interested in talking to me and having me help you go to the next level, go to topendevs.com/coaching. I will give you a 1-hour free session where we can figure out what you're trying to do, where you're trying to go, and figure out what the next steps are. And then from there, we can figure out how to get you to the place you want to go. So once again, that's topendevs.com/coaching.
So why don't we move on to our picks? And Jack, do you want to kick us off today?
Sure. So I've been geeking out on this guy on YouTube, James Hoffman. He's a coffee guy out of the UK. And he gets so into the science and the mechanics, and his presentation style is just so soothing. It's like kind of watching like a lo-fi kind of music, you know, track, plus getting a little bit of knowledge about coffee. And I'm not going to do any of this. I mean, everything that he shows is like, here's $1,500 coffee grinder. Are you kidding me? No, I'm never going to buy that. It's not a thing. But, you know, at the same time, it's like, it's just like, wow, okay, this is really cool. And I actually have tried some more espresso recently, and I got to say, everything in my neighborhood, the espresso is terrible. So I'm going back to lattes. But it's really fun to watch.
Awesome. It's
always fun to dream.
Oh, yeah. $1,500 coffee there. Coffee grinder. Make the coffee.
Just the grinder.
Just grind it.
Paige, do you have any picks for us?
Sure. So my pick this week is going to be a technical pick. It is actually the Twilio API for any developers who are interested or looking to do SMS type of work. I used this recently for a little IoT project that I put together for an anti-theft tracker using one of the products that I work with. I work for a company called Blues Wireless, and we make IoT products. So I wanted to use one of our products to alert people if it started moving for something like, you know, environmental monitoring stations or statues or just something valuable that you have on your land that you know shouldn't be moving. And if it is, something's going really wrong. So one of the very cool things was that it's really easy to set up a Twilio kind of starter account, assign a number to it, and then just start using it to send SMS messages. So it was, like I said, it was very simple. It was, the documentation was really good. So if you need something like that for SMS alerts, I would definitely recommend looking into it and giving it a spin. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, Twilio is awesomely useful. Like, yeah. I still can't believe how easy they make SMS, which is not the most fun thing to deal with.
Yeah, and they give you a little bit of a starter money, so you don't have to put in a credit card immediately, and you can just kind of try it out and see what you think of it.
Cool. My pick for this week is an iOS app called Big Write, BigWrite. It is the world's simplest app. All it is it gives you an input, you type in a message, and I'm going to hold it up for my co-host here. It just shows the message in like big, as big of font that'll possibly fit on the phone and in high contrast. You'd be surprised how often that comes in handy. Like anytime you're at, you need to whisper something to somebody and it's really hard to, you can just type it out in the app. Or what I discovered recently, anytime you're in a loud event, right? Like a sporting event, and you need to tell somebody something and you can't hear a damn thing. Well, you can just type it out on the phone and hold it up and see it. Or like you can see it across the, I don't know. It's a silly little app, right? But it's just really well executed and it solves a problem. So if you've ever ran into that before, it's just a fun one to have on your phone that you can use.
Interesting.
That's pretty cool.
Christian, what picks do you have?
Okay, so I'm a parent. So recently, I don't know why, but I got into this YouTube show, I guess, with World Strictest Parents. And it's kind of weird because to me, they don't look strict. And it's each episode is like an internal debate with myself. Wait, so what does that mean if I don't consider them to be strict? Does that mean that I'm stricter than them? You know, it's just like going back and forth. But I'm not strict. So kids, if you listen to this in the future, I'm not strict at all.
Okay.
Awesome. Well, Christian, last question for you. If people want to follow you, keep up with you, that sort of thing, what's the best place to do that?
So I guess Twitter, my handle is ChristianBoat_, because apparently it's taken, the other one, not by me. And yeah, also GitHub, the Google repo, and you can find me on Slack, on the Preact space as well. Yeah, and everywhere on the internet, I guess, if you search for me.
Cool. Well, it was awesome chatting with you. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, that was great. Nice seeing you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, everybody. Until next week.
See you then.
See you.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I know. You've always been looking for a way to support the React Roundup podcast. Well, you're in luck. We just set it up. It's reactroundup.com/premium. And all you have to do is go over there. You pay us $9 a month and you'll get access to a couple of things. The first thing is you will get episodes with no ads. Won't that be nice? You will also get access to a monthly call where we sit down and we plan out what we want to talk about for the next several months. And you can give us ideas for questions and other things that we can ask our guests that are coming up. So you'll know what episodes are coming up and what we're going to be talking about and have some feedback there, which is awesome. And finally, it's a terrific way to support the show. So if you want to support us in putting out React Roundup every month, go to reactroundup.com/premium and sign up.